This is the Aftermarket Radio Network.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Auto Repair Marketing Podcast. I'm your host, Brian Walker, and today my guest is Marianne Pruitt from Mosaic. Before we get started, I want to thank our sponsors, RepairPal. RepairPal is the key to unlocking new business for your auto repair shop. Find out more at RepairPal.com/shops. Hi, Marianne.
Hi, Brian. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, thanks for being with me today.
I'm excited.
We are here in Navarre Beach, Florida.
Yes.
And Marianne and I are in a peer group together with Agency Management Institute. And we get together just like many of you do. We get together twice a year and we share financials and we share challenges. And it's just a great way for us to have relationships with other agency owners. And you've been involved in it for a while.
Yeah, it's great. It's one of those things where you can learn from each other and you can contribute and all the above. And it really build a bond for over time with each other and just get to learn. And it's just one of those things that you end up looking forward to every six months that you're ready to go to.
Yeah, it's been really great for us.
Oh, that's good.
So highly encourage you, if you're in a coaching program, they probably have peer groups. So something to definitely get involved with.
Yeah.
But I asked Marianne to be a guest on the podcast today because she is a literal expert in digital advertising. When we at Shop Marketing Pros talk about digital advertising, we're primarily talking about Facebook and Google ads, and you do that.
Right, yep.
But they do some really high-level stuff. One of those things is geofencing, and that's the primary thing that I want to talk about today because I know a lot of you are interested in geofencing. It's a hot topic in auto repair, but I think it's very misunderstood.
Yeah.
Some of the other things that they do, though, just so that you have a little bit of the background, and you can fill in also, but they do programmatic media, which most of the people listening don't have a clue what programmatic media is, and they do it at a very high level, literally working on national political campaigns, presidential.
We've worked on, we have all the above, political, brands, all direct to consumer, direct to B2B, all the above. So we've worked on, we've had the awesome pleasure and blessing to be able to work with all these different groups that we get to. Yeah, it's neat. The things that we've learned in every campaign teaches you something new, whether it's business or whether it's political, all the above.
Yeah, so just like in an auto repair shop, there are levels to everything.
Yes.
And they are at the highest level when it comes to digital advertising, programmatic media, and all that.
Yeah, and programmatic is so misunderstood.
Yeah.
People don't understand it, and we really have to be shifting how we are thinking about advertising and how we are thinking about targeting our audiences.
Yeah, and I'd love to have you on, and maybe we can talk about programmatic sometime.
Yes.
It's not something that's really being used much in auto repair yet. Some people are with like some Hulu advertising and stuff like that. But let's talk about geofencing.
Yes.
So what is geofencing?
Geofencing in its most simplistic form is literally a circle around a target location and funneling ads to that location in its most simplistic form. There's so many other things that can take place in geofencing, whether you're doing it through Google platforms or you're doing it through programmatic. That changes how you're using geofencing.
Yeah.
But geofencing in its most simple and best way for our brains to wrap around it is it's literally drawing a circle around a certain area, and that's where you're targeting your ads.
Yeah. And then you can do a lot of advanced stuff with that.
Yes.
You can advertise to somebody while they are within that circle, but also just if they have been in that circle.
And then retargeting them back. So another thing that also takes place in the programmatic space that we can do with geofencing is called blueprinting. Mm-hmm. And blueprinting is actually taking a very specific location, and you can go back in time and actually take the data and then retarget individuals that have gone to that. Where it's great for customers like yours is that you can actually blueprint a competitor's space and retarget their ads for you. So if you're in a very competitive world, you can look at who your competitors are and retarget that space specifically. Blueprint, okay, I want to catch any device that's been in here for the last 90 days and retarget them with my ads.
Yeah. You've got geofencing and then you have geotargeting.
Yes.
And I think a lot of people mix that up.
Yes, very much. Because geofencing in its most simplistic way is just fencing there and that's it. Geotargeting gets into more data sets and more targeting. Like it really is what they say it. Fencing, targeting. So think of it that way. You're drawing a fence and targeting is now we're going to get into more specific targeting is really what geotargeting is.
Like on Facebook, for example, we can select someone's address and say we want to advertise within a 5 mile radius of this. Would that be considered geofencing?
It gets really muddied, right? In a way, in its most simplistic form, So really, truly, what you want to say is, so where geofencing is used the most is, here's an event, and I'm going to circle where that mileage is within that event. Mm-hmm. Yes, that is exactly where I want to be. Within 5 miles of that radius, that's where I am.
Yeah.
So that is geofencing, yes. It gets muddied because what layers are we then adding into that? What are other things that we're adding into that targeting mm-hmm. other than just the address? That's where it starts to get muddied down into geotargeting.
Because also with geofencing, you can draw very specific lines,
yes,
like around a building or
yes,
even a portion of a building.
Yes, you can.
And say,
you can
I want to advertise
zip code. You can
just to people in there.
And you can just go a zip code. You can just go into a different... A radius is a little bit of a wider net than what you're going, than what you're doing with geofencing. Yep.
How would an auto repair shop or just a small local business use something like geofencing?
Geofencing, and I think, is such a good tool that's actually not utilized enough. And frankly, the biggest piece with it is how retargeting is the piece that's not used enough, in my opinion. Where we've actually seen some really great geofencing campaigns have taken place around conventions. And let's say you're going to a very specific convention and you have a very target audience that's going to be there, using the geofencing of where the hotels that people are going to be at, let's target the hotel, where's the conference center that they're going to be at, and then retargeting them afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
Where auto repair shops can really use it is actually targeting your competitors' space. And that's more in programmatic than it is in the Google space of geofencing.
Yeah.
But retargeting what you can do, those are audiences that are obviously going there that either maybe they had a good experience, but maybe they didn't have a good experience. Mm-hmm. And then you can retarget them with your quality experience that you're going to provide. That's how it can be used to a different level than maybe most auto repair shops are even thinking.
So they would literally set up a campaign where they're circling all of the auto repair shops in the area, the dealerships that work on the brands that they want, and then target those people who have been inside of that. And then isn't there a way, too, where you could say if someone has been in this area for in excess of this amount of time, do not target them
so you're not
targeting the employees?
Yes, you can absolutely eliminate individuals that are in it. But here's the other beauty of it. When you're retargeting them, you can then, with our retargeting, with our blueprinting, we can then see when they walked into your store.
So that's
then
your tracking metrics.
You get the whole tracking metrics and the attribution to the sale then at that point.
Yeah.
So there's a full circle that can go with it that's just a little bit more advanced than just regular geofencing.
So can just any agency do geofencing?
No, you really, well, in theory, probably, but you really want to have specialties of individuals that help you with it because of the fact that it's not something more and more Google, programmatic, social, all of it's becoming more and more complex for anybody to operate, right? It's not the same user-friendly, and we can get into how social is not the same targeting tool it used to be.
Mm-hmm.
There's so many different things that go into it. Media is now an expertise.
Yeah.
And really, truly, you want to find those partners to work with that can walk you through that. And because I can't tell you how many times people will come to us and say, oh, we just spent so much money trying to figure it out.
Yeah.
And we could have just done this from the very beginning. And that's the best way to do it.
And I know that any agency could do geofencing on the lowest level,
like a
simple Facebook radius or something. And I almost don't even consider that geofencing.
I agree with you.
Technically it is. But one of the things that I learned was that to really do geofencing the way that you're talking about, you have to buy into a platform or a network.
Yes.
And what we see happening, which I would love for you to talk about, is the dilution of budget as there become layers and layers of people who are reselling this stuff.
Yes. Oh, my goodness gracious. I can get on that all day. But yes, so you're spot on that in order to do it properly, and if you're going to do anything programmatic, you want to find partners that are direct seats on DSPs. That is exactly where you want to go. That's what we do. We have seats on multiples, and that's how you want to target, because I call it a diluted CPM, because you're going to have so many different layers between you and the DSP, and that's actually bidding, that you don't want to do that. That's a waste of budget and a waste of money for what you're looking for. So the key pieces that you want to make sure, and you want a quality CPM as well. We'll get into that as well. But with that, that's minimum budgets. Unless you have a few million dollars to spend a year, you can't do that yourself. And most agencies don't have the volume to be able to do this, let alone do it on multiples and be able to put you in the right places. Going back to what you were just saying, though, what's really important is we have to really flop our media strategies and our marketing strategies on their head and think about the audience first, as opposed to thinking about the tactic first and the message first.
Yeah.
We need to think about who the audience is, get to know them, and then we're targeting our media around the audience.
Mm-hmm. Basically figuring out the watering holes, where they are.
Yes.
And Yeah, and that's something that we talk about a lot, is that especially in the small business world, basically people who are, they're not technical marketers.
Right, right.
They tend to say, I want to do Facebook advertising, or right, I want to do Google advertising, when really they should be looking, like you say, at who is their target audience and where are they spending their time, mm-hmm, and how can we get our message in front,
yes,
of them.
And getting to know that audience. Who, and the more you get to know the audience, the better our media tactics can be.
Yeah.
The more you get to know them, if let's say you're a specialty shop and that's where you're going after, and you're only, I'm just going out, you're saying one vehicle, like you only service Mercedes. Okay. Mm-hmm. We have the data to tell you who Mercedes owners are. Let's target the Mercedes owner, as opposed to going in a wide ramit of just going the geofence of an area around you.
Yeah.
No, let's actually target Mercedes owners within a 10-mile radius, mm-hmm, or within that. And we know those certain things. We know their purchase habits now. That's a whole nother layer of marketing and media that people are not taking advantage of that they should.
Yeah. Or targeting those high-end neighborhoods.
Yes, absolutely.
Those sorts of things. So, when we're doing a Facebook ad, we're putting a video or a picture, mm-hmm, or some text in front of someone.
Right.
If we do a Google ad, typically we don't do much display advertising, so yep, we're usually just putting text in front of them when they're,
yep,
searching for,
yep,
something. When you are doing geofencing, what is the medium? What does it look like to the consumer? What are they experiencing and seeing on their side?
If I'm in the programmatic space, I'm serving video, I'm serving display, I'm serving, then I'm retargeting, pre-roll, streaming audio. There's so many different layers now at that point. Once we go into, when you take and bring into the programmatic space and bring that into the blueprinting and the geofencing, the tools that are available to you are so advanced and what you'll be able to do. You can do it in the Google space as well, of being able to do it. And I talk about Google because a lot of times people will tell you, oh, I can do programmatic in Google. And that's great, but Google's one data set. Now we have so many other data sets. And plus now we're talking about first party data. How do you get first party data in there and build lookalike audiences and build things that you need to be? Social is not the target medium that it was on its own before. You
right,
have to have this first party data to start looking at lookalike audiences.
I love talking about sponsors of the podcast who have already worked with and who have used before. So today I'm super excited to talk to you about RepairPal, which if you didn't know, will introduce your shop to new customers through RepairPal.com, the largest site for auto repair, and through the recommendation of their partners like USAA, CarMax, and Consumer Reports. Our shop was in RepairPal's certified network, and it was great for getting new customers who were looking for more than just oil changes. The average RepairPal customer spends over $600 on their first visit. I loved it, especially because we all know that consumers still mistrust repair shops. But the millions of customers that visit RepairPal.com monthly, they trust RepairPal certified shops for their high quality and great service. And there's no fear about being overcharged, so we were able to just focus on the repair. I highly recommend you check them out. It's the way to grow your business. Go to RepairPal.com/shops, get 1 month of service free, and save $150 off certification. So talk a little bit about first party,
yes,
data.
Yeah, first party data is so important, more and more. And I've been on this bandwagon for a while, but I think it's now we're headed into such a crucial time for first party data. Third party data is always going to be here, cookieless and all the above. We're still able to target that way because behaviors are still going to be there and consumers are still opting in way more than opting out. There's still that happening. But your first party data allows for multiple things to happen. First, you're getting to know your audience at a whole new level with first party data. You're getting to know habits and behaviors based on who they are by them giving them your information.
Mm-hmm.
So when they're giving you their information and you're able to use that information, not only then can you match back IP addresses to that information, but then you can build lookalike audiences that are similar to those individuals. That's a force multiplier of what you're looking at.
Yeah.
So first party data is one of those things that everybody needs to be collecting first party data, period. There's no qualms about it, but that's what everybody needs to be collecting it.
And so our listeners have no idea what,
yes,
first party data is or how to collect that. So basically from their standpoint, collecting first party data is going to be having a pixel on a website.
It could be. Yeah,
but
actually,
also asking for email addresses. And
a lot of times what's great too, though, with shops specifically, your customers come to you with, mm-hmm, the vehicle that you have to fix or maintenance or whatever it is. You're collecting first party data right there.
Yeah.
You're getting their name, their address, their phone number, You're getting the information. That's first party data. You're just needing them to opt in to use that information. You guys actually have a better resource than most people have. In today's world of being so digital, we don't have as many people going brick and mortar or going to physical locations. That's not changing for your consumers. Yeah. Your consumers are coming to you because they need to. So when they're coming to, or you're going to them to service their vehicle, whatever it is that's happening, you still have to get their name, address, and phone number, their email address. You're having to collect data. That's data that's literally coming to you. Just have them opt in and find a mechanism to collect it. Then from there, the lookalike audiences and the things that you can do with the data of what you're collecting is right there. It's actually free to come to your door.
Yeah.
And it's beautiful. You guys actually have it way better than most.
Some of the data that's available out there is scary.
Yes.
People don't know. They don't even want to know.
No, they don't.
What it is. But I know that there are ways now to be able to, for instance, send a direct mail piece to someone who visited your website, and they didn't provide any information when they were there.
Correct. Yeah. The IP targeting and physical address targeting and pairing is a real thing. And us as consumers, it's interesting, because, and I know you hear me talk about this a lot, but the generational differences of how each generation actually cares about how we're using the data. The younger you get, the more they don't care.
Right.
They've never known anything different but us using their data.
Yeah.
And the older you get, the more creeped out they are that we use their data.
Yep.
I remember my father, he was searching for a coat, a new coat on the internet. And then he calls me, he's like, I'm getting nothing but served ads for coats. Why? Why is this happening? And he's 80. And that's, this is so weird. This is bizarre. Where my son, this is, I love this story. And my son loves, both of my kids love foreign languages and they get into foreign languages. My older son comes running upstairs to me one day and he goes, Mom, I'm getting served ads in Spanish. This is amazing. And he thought it was the coolest thing because it was customization to him.
Yeah.
So it was working to him. Generationally, we're looking at it, but that goes back to getting to know our audiences of who is it that we're really targeting and going after. And it doesn't mean you don't have more than one target audience. The Mercedes owner can be 70 and can also be 25, but we know that they're a Mercedes owner. So how do we target them on that level? It's then which tactics we're using for each generation and how to go after it.
There are a lot of misconceptions, too, about the older generations and the tactics that you use,
because
the older generations are using technology more than a lot of people.
Way more than you think. And it's funny because they're actually savvier on it than we give them credit. And COVID pushed, I say it was an evolution that probably was going to take another 10 to 15 years that overnight happened. We saw all-time consumption of social media with our older consumers out of the gate.
Yeah.
And it's because they wanted to know and stay connected with family. Those were our most vulnerable population, and they were told they couldn't be around family, they couldn't be around friends. Mm-hmm. So what did they do? They got on social media. Now we've created new habits.
Yeah.
The thing with COVID that happened was we were at an all-time high of consumption of media. COVID happened. Human nature is to collect as much information to survive. That is what we are created to do. We start collecting all this information. We start over-consuming media. Guess what? COVID lasted a couple years, right? Habits never changed. So now we've created habits, not just behavior or shortfalls that are just taking place.
Yeah.
We're all-time high of consumption of media, and our older generations totally changed how they consume media.
In marketing, especially for a small business like an auto repair shop, these are typically $750,000 revenue to, on the higher end, typically $3 million. If they're putting 5 to 7% of their gross into their marketing budget, it's still not a huge amount.
Right.
Is geofencing something that is practical for a business of that size? And where would you say it fits within the hierarchy of marketing compared to things like standard Google ads and Facebook advertising and direct mail?
So it depends on also the goals of your sales. If you are a well-known shop and maybe somebody's, or you already have a well-established brand, you're going to be looking at Google for search terms because people know you already.
Mm-hmm.
So it's top of funnel or bottom of funnel approach. The bottom funnel is they're searching for you.
Yeah.
They know your name. But if you're top of funnel, you still need some of that brand, or maybe you are a well-known brand, but you want to keep the reminder of your brand out there. Some of those top of funnel approaches need to be there. Let's say you're a brand new shop that really needs to build the brand. Bottom of funnel is actually not going to help you yet. You have to build that brand. So that's where the geofencing, that's where the targeted ads, that's where you're establishing who you are to get into that. Then down the road, when we start to build that brand and people start to call you based off of the ads and based on looking through to the websites and you're seeing that kind of traction growth, then from there, you start to look at a mix of it all. It's really, to me, you have to maximize. I don't care if you're spending $100 million. I don't care if you're spending $5,000. Every penny has to be maximized.
Yep. So you talked about we were going to come back to a quality CPM.
Oh, yes. Yes. And I talk about, this is probably my biggest pet peeve and soapbox to get on, because anybody can go to you and say, okay, yeah, no, I'm going to get you a $2 CPM. I'm going to get you a really low CPM.
And what's a CPM?
A CPM is a cost per impression.
Okay.
So, and there are individuals and groups that will come in and they'll be able to promise you the lowest of the low. But what you're not recognizing is that you have no brand protection on there. You can be on sites you don't want to be on. You have no controls of what's happening. You can be on MFAs, which are called, which are made for advertising websites that are, there's
no
nothing
traffic.
There. There's no traffic. It's literally just made to be there.
Yeah.
And you can have bots. A quality CPM. Yeah, your CPM may be a little higher and you may be looking for a higher CPM, but it's going to be more quality when you have brand protection. You're showing on sites that you should be on, not sites that are not good to your brand. And you're making sure that you have that quality overall of who you're trying to target, but you have controls.
Yeah.
You're not on, you're not getting bots. You're getting true impressions of your true target audience, and you're not on MFAs. So these are things that, these are tough questions that you have to ask your partners because it happens all the time. And there's players out there that this is what they're doing. And that's just the way it is. But it's a soapbox that I could get on all day, because that quality, yes, you're paying more. Don't base it off of CPM only.
Mm-hmm.
You want it to be, look at what quality is going to be with that.
I've got a good friend of mine, a guy named Powlett. Mm-hmm. Pat was the first person that ever introduced me to programmatic media. And he has made it a life mission to make people aware of bots.
Yes.
And like to go after and combat the whole thing. And that's something that I think a lot of people don't realize when you look at the impressions that you're getting and you think that, oh, this many eyes saw me, but it's not really eyes that saw you. Is it the advertisers who are creating these bots to?
So it's all, so MFAs are created just to be landing pages for ads so that you can get an impression. There is no impression. Bots are going to that spot. All being created for money. And that's at the end of the day what it is. Bots are not going to buy your service and your product. So that is nothing to ever go after. You want to put these parameters up.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm so in agreement with Pat on that of let's expose bots and MFAs as much as we possibly can, because it's not ethical way of doing business.
Right.
It's not the way to do it. And we want to make sure that if you're getting an impression, it is a person that is seeing that impression.
Mm-hmm.
And not just that, it's your target audience that is seeing that impression.
Right.
The other thing is too, know this, when we're going after the target audience, sometimes you're going to show up on websites that you're like, why am I on that site? That's weird. But in reality, that's where your target audience is. You're not always your target audience. We don't always know exactly where they're going to be. We don't know where the traffic is. But that individual, when we go Mercedes owners, that's where they were.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where we went.
And that's the idea of programmatic is that, and I don't even know how to really explain this, but there's like a user hash out there that's all this information about this person. And within milliseconds, when someone is on a website and you have an advertiser who's advertising on that website, they're able to match that user hash with the advertiser to say, this is who you're looking for. This is that person.
Right.
And it displays.
You're literally, instead of going, okay, when I started in media, and I've been in this long enough that I've had seasonality to see the evolution of media take place. So when I started in media over 20 years ago, it was, we're going to go with demographics. We're going to target adults 18 to 54 years old. I always thought it was weird that we're going to target the 18-year-old and the 54-year-old the same way, but we did. And that's how we went very broad. This is my target audience. I'm going to look at my cost per point and how many GRPs I'm going to get for this. I had TV, radio, print, outdoor. That's what I had, and mail. That's it. There was nothing more to that. There was no technology to it. There was nothing. That was what it was. And now I can look at it and go, okay, I actually need to target the woman that is 42 years old, that drives a Mercedes Benz, that has this many kids, that, like, what are the layers of what I know about this person? Because when there's one, there's many. And that's the audience that we have to go after. You have to know that audience so well that then you can target your ads to them. And really what programmatic is, I call it human-driven AI on our part, is we AI collect all the data. All the data is there. And then we are automatically, it's an AI process of bidding for that impression of that individual, that woman that's 42 years old that drives the Mercedes-Benz.
So is there anything that I should have asked you that I didn't that would be valuable to our audience of auto repair shop owners?
I think the biggest thing for auto repair shop owners is to know that you spending a little actually does make a difference, and you doing things targeted, there's more options for you than you realize.
Yeah.
I think that's probably the biggest thing with auto shops. They're not sure, either they're multi-generational shops or there's a lot of different makeups of shops of how they operate and how they work, but there's more options to you than you think, even if you have a smaller budget.
Yeah.
You still have options for things to do. And frankly, do them so you stand out from your competition. It's a competitive field. There's a lot of shops in the country, right? All over the place. And so it's a very competitive field. What are you doing to stand out? And know that even the little that you're doing can make a difference if it's done right.
And then last thing that I want to ask you, huge problem in the industry right now is a shortage of technicians and hiring.
Yeah.
And I've seen people using geofencing for hiring. Mm-hmm. I've actually run some geofencing campaigns through a company before I learned from you.
Okay.
And there's no telling how much that budget was diluted.
Yes. Yep.
But we did successfully hire somebody. Mm-hmm. And we were able to circle the service departments of dealerships in the area. Are a lot of people doing that? Are they using this as a hiring tool?
Yeah, it is more and more being used as a hiring tactic. We've taken some B2B practices that and then applied it now to hiring. One thing that you can do in the programmatic space that's just a little bit more advanced than just the geofence is we can actually target by job title. And so the individuals that are any type of technician, we can go through and actually add all of those layers in of any titles that they might be in and serve the ads to that title. And so that makes it even more refined and even more down to that penny saving spend being right where you want it to be on the money. That's where it's really important. So those are some extra advances that you can do, but this is definitely a trend that individuals are doing it. And because we see it in B2B, we've been targeting job titles for a while. We've been going down that path. I'm very focused on that path. Now with this, it's now, okay, I need to hire. I have a hard, it's not the only industry that's having a hard time hiring, but the more competitive it is and the harder and the more trained and all the above. And COVID changed that too, of how people are working and the whole thing. But you now are able to target down by the job title. So it's not just the geofence. Yes, that is a great way of doing it. But then just add a little extra frosting on that and look at a little programmatic targeting with it as well.
That's awesome. I appreciate you being with us today.
Yeah.
This is something that we've been talking about for a little while now. And we need to start offering the service to our clients through Mosaic. If somebody wanted to get in touch with you, what is the best way for them to do that?
Absolutely. They can get hold of me on our website, mosaic.agency/contact. Comes straight to my email.
Okay.
Follow me on LinkedIn, on Twitter. But I'm all about whatever questions you have when it comes to media. Our team's happy to help however we can.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And thank you again to RepairPal for sponsoring this episode. And thank you for listening. I want to invite you to listen to the other podcasts on the Aftermarket Radio Network. You can find those at aftermarketradionetwork.com. Hope you'll listen in again next week. And until then, go fill those bays.
You've been listening to the Auto Repair Marketing Podcast with Kim and Brian Walker. Follow the podcast on your favorite listening app. Find their emails in the show notes and visit them at shopmarketingpros.com. Let Kim and Brian know what you want discussed because they're all about advancing the aftermarket.